Hello, welcome to Future Library. You're expecting me to do my usual bumbling introduction. I'm going to try something different today. I'm not going to do a bumbling introduction. Just hello and welcome to the podcast. I've got a guest. His name is Jared. Jared is in a band called The Solvents. I've met Jared many years ago. I'll have to reminisce about where with him in a moment. But Jared, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Jared, you're all the way from the US is where you're calling from, isn't it?
Yes, I am in Port Townsend, Washington as we speak.
Fantastic. And through the miracle of technology that is, I always express wonder about this in the podcast, we are talking in real time in crystal clear audio. It's fantastic. Jared, I'm trying to remember where I first met you. I think it was on the K Records board.
That's right. Yeah, the K Records message board.
Oh man, back in the day.
Yeah, this is like 8 years ago, maybe.
Oh, way longer than that. I think it was probably around 2002, 2003.
I guess so. Yeah,
because I think that board had kind of died a death by about 2004 or 2005. So
something like that.
So it was way back, and you played. You came over and played some shows in the UK. I put you on my only show I ever put on in High Wycombe.
High Wycombe. I was just trying to remember what town that was. Yeah.
At their student union at the university.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was a really fun show.
It was an odd show.
It was really weird, yeah.
Then I remember there was a really long walk back afterwards.
There was a really long walk back, yeah. And we all, the three of us, my wife Emily, who plays violin in the band, and my sister was along, we all had huge backpacks.
Yeah.
And we were like, where are we going?
I remember the walk back because I was living with a girl called Millie at the time, and the flat we had was right out of the outskirts. Oh, it was. Did we end up walking all the way, or did we get a taxi in the end?
No, we walked. We walked the whole way.
Jesus, it was a long way. I did that walk a couple of times myself, and cycled it a few times. And I do remember it being a long way. And then I remember you were disappointed we didn't have Wi-Fi because we weren't. What's your Wi-Fi key? It's like we don't have Wi-Fi. Sorry.
Like, whoa. Yeah. I know. I brought my laptop along. I remember breaking that out sometimes, and people were pretty blown away by it.
Yeah.
This was like 2006, I think.
Something like that. Yeah.
I broke it out on the train a couple times in England, and people were pretty blown away by it. I remember it was funny.
Yeah. So anyway, you should tell us a bit about yourself, because obviously I know who you are, but the listeners, some of them won't. So give us a bit of background about yourself, Jared.
Okay. Well, again, my name is Jared. I play in a group called Solvents from the Pacific Northwest here in Washington. And I've been doing that since about, I think like I want to say 2002, but it might be more like 2004 when things actually kind of came together as to what it is now or what it's been. I am 38 years old. I have two twin daughters who are 14, a stepdaughter who's 13. And just basically been doing the home recording thing pretty much for the whole time. I've been in the real, whatever that means, studio a few times, but mostly I do it all myself. And that's kind of what I've been up to the last decade or so.
And I have to say, doing it yourself is something that I'm a firm proponent of, as anybody who's listened to the podcast in its 30-odd episodes will know. I very much encourage that kind of thing. I have to point out to listeners, there was a small amount of confusion when I first invited Jared to do this. I think, Jared, you briefly got the show confused with my other podcast, the Shouting at Fundamentalists one. It's not called that, but...
I kind of thought I was going to come on and you were going to rip me apart. I was ready.
You were pumped and sorted, ready to go. You're like, I've got my theology all straight. I'm going to take him down. But it's not this podcast.
No, that's okay.
I was explaining that to Kristen Hirsch from the Throwing Muses when her and Dave from the Muses were on, and I was explaining about my other podcast, and Kristen kind of described it in such a way that I kind of went, yeah, you're right, because I described what the other podcast was, which, you know, you'd have some fundamentalist on, and, you know, me and a few other atheist friends would kind of discuss things with them, and sometimes it'd get quite heated, and she just said, what a depressing way to spend an hour. And I was like thinking... Yeah, she's absolutely right. Yeah, yeah. One of my all-time heroes has just told me that that is a depressing way to spend an hour. She's right. So we tried to make it more fun, that show, but that's not this show. This show is more positive.
Positive.
I try to be nice with people on this, and luckily so far everybody's been nice back, which is good.
Cool.
So, you know, this won't be the episode that breaks that, because I've known Jared for a while, so that's good. So, you've been doing the solvents for a long time. Before I started the show, I thought I'd do a little bit of just kind of background reading. I have to say, solventsmusic.com, you've gone for a very sparse look on that web. It has at the top, homestead, get a site, get found, get customers. And then it says, sorry, the site you requested has been disabled. what were you aiming for with that? Because that's quite...
I'm a minimalist, Alex, and I just, you know, I want it to be as bare bones as possible.
It's amazing, because I've tried clicking through every letter in there to see if maybe the S in sorry was for solvents, or the T was for Tumblr, or I couldn't even see a G. Oh, no, there's a G in get customers. I thought that might be gigs. But no.
No, there's nothing there. I actually just shut it down about a month ago. Because I don't know why, I just was like, I was kind of sick of it, and the design program that comes with that is really weird, and it's not very fun, and I couldn't really make it how I wanted it to look, and I was paying like $20 a month, and I was just like, you know, I'm done. So I haven't really figured out anything to replace it yet.
Well, you know what? This is something that's actually come up a few times in various episodes with various people. And the consensus seems to be that the whole notion of banned websites with, you know, a page with information about the members, another page with gig guide on and all this kind of stuff seems to be fairly... extinct as an idea. It seems to be something that no longer is really particularly useful.
It doesn't seem very useful to me, and I just wasn't, it doesn't, like, I was getting a lot more, you know, hits on my Bandcamp and of course Facebook and all that kind of stuff. It seemed so much easier to be in touch with people and, you know, I'm a huge Bandcamp fan. I think the Bandcamp is amazing, and that's how I sell stuff, and the website, honestly, just, it kind of looked like shit, and I couldn't get it to, you know, do the things I wanted to do. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just have my Bandcamp. That seems to work out fine.
You know what? The amount of recommendations we have for Bandcamp on this show, I kind of maybe should go to Bandcamp and say, look, do you want to sponsor me? Because
absolutely
everybody I spoke to, I don't think I've spoken to a single musician that hasn't said how great Bandcamp is. The only surprise I ever had with Bandcamp, which was I wasn't kind of fully paying attention with it, was the way they do their revenue split. Kind of, you know, you kind of get used to things online, you know, that a little bit being kind of creamed off the top on each sale.
Sure.
And I was quite surprised when I got my first email from Bandcamp saying, yay, somebody's bought something, you're not getting any money for this one. And I was like, oh, why am I not getting any money for this one? It's like, because it's taking back your revenue share. It's like, oh, I said, yeah, it's that few percent, isn't it? Oh, balls, I've forgotten about that. So that took me by surprise, but you know, I suppose the thing is, it's no worse than it taking it off from each little bit. It just took me by surprise.
Right.
And it's only because I didn't pay attention.
Right. Gotta read
those things. You know, because the revenue split thing is something that nobody bothers reading. Oh, we get money from them. Good. But I have to say, overall, that little blip, which is entirely my fault for not reading it, I find Bandcamp to be brilliant. I love the fact that you can just leave the stuff up there. If people are buying MP3s, you don't even have to post them anything. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
Just get an email that says you've sold something. And you think, you know, the old days, it used to be you've sold something, you'd be like, okay, where have I got to post it to? I've got to get the envelope sorted out. Have I got an envelope? Can I get to the post office? Now it's just like, you sit there and go, bingo, sorted. So
gone. Yeah.
Absolutely. So me, everybody that I've spoken to is using either Bandcamp or some kind of model of that kind of thing. I think the Kristen Hirsch and the Throwing Muses have their own kind of thing going on that's a similar setup. But even people like... 16 Deluxe and stuff who I spoke to were perfectly happy just to put their stuff up. And so many people are actually going for the free model as well, which is interesting. What's your take on that? Do you still find that you're making money from it if you're selling things, or do you...
You know, I'm so torn on it right now. I'm really trying to figure out how to handle it. The free, you know, versus the not free. And I am somewhat anti-free, I guess. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm really on the fence. Like I appreciate free music for sure. And but I also pay for music as well. Mm-hmm. As much as I can, I try to buy, and because I know that it helps, it really, even, you know, selling stuff here and there for us is fantastic. You know, like getting money once in a while is a great thing. It mm-hmm. helps us pay bills. It helps us, you know, buy food and whatever. And the way things are going, it just seems like, you know, that's starting to slip away more and more. So, yeah, go ahead.
It's a very difficult thing to decide what to do, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you've got the notion that you want people to hear it, but also mm-hmm. you've absolutely nailed it by saying that you've got to be able to afford to pay bills and eat.
Right.
And it's kind of balancing the two things. I mean, I know that people like David Byrne have said, oh, well, what you do is you make your music as cheap as possible and then you tour to make the money. But,
right.
you know, when you're in his position, that's maybe easier to do than it is in,
sure.
you know, in our
position. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not hugely expensive to tour at this kind of level, but at the same time, yeah, it's still a lot goes on, and you know, travel isn't free, and eventually you get tired of sleeping on people's floors, and
sure,
you know, and as you say, you have to eat.
You do.
And the other side of it as well is that though I'm like you, I'm kind of torn about it because I've kind of gone down the free route, but at the same time, I am aware that there's the risk that it makes your work seem like it's not worth paying for.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with that statement a lot. In a perfect world, I think it would be great for an artist to definitely give some of the work away. Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe special things, or here's the demos for the album. They're free. Check out the record. You know, something like that seems that's completely doable. But you know, I have to fault artists, and myself included, for sort of really jumping on the whole, like, give everything away thing. I think it sort of has set up this precedent, I guess, of people expecting music to be free.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of wondering, because, I mean, obviously, you know, the way we're coming at it is we're almost in the position of being privileged enough to be able to give it away for nothing, you know, if we really sure. have to. You know, it's not... A lot of musicians who are doing that, it's not their main income stream anymore.
Right.
But is it that it's possible that we're setting up the next generation of musicians to be really screwed because, you know, they're going to look back
right.
on us and
yeah.
go, they're the ones that sold us all out for giving yeah, stuff away. Right. Those dirty hippie bastards.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like, you know, my kids, for example, you know, they're 14 and they wouldn't even dream of buying an album or even a song mm-hmm. because they don't have to. It's how it's what they've, you know, been raised into. It's Spotify, you know, they wouldn't consider going to a record store. And that, is a little disturbing to me, honestly. Like I wish that they would, and hopefully someday they will find the value again and in going and finding something and, you know, being excited to find a record or a CD, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That is disturbing. And I, you know, I wish that it could be different, I guess.
I mean, the other side of it though, is that, the way that I used to find out about records was through the music press. And that seems to have kind of faded away. That suffered as well at the hands of the internet. And it's been kind of replaced by kind of taste setting blogs, and you've got these self-appointed gatekeepers now.
Yeah.
If you're not covered by Pitchfork blogs or Gorilla versus Bear or whatever, then even a free release is going to just disappear into the ether and nobody's going to know about it. Whereas
yeah.
you know, if these guys pick up on you, then you know, you can fart in a bag and somebody will go, oh, it's amazing, and you'll get like 10,000 downloads. And you'll go to the SoundCloud page and it will say, this release has exhausted all of the downloads available and all this kind of stuff. There's so many people making really great music that's just not heard because it's not kind of in with the right people. And there's more gatekeepers than there were, and they're spread out in more places. But at the same time, there's something, I don't know, we're losing. I don't really kind of discover things now unless it's through people I know. And, you know, somebody I know's playing a show with somebody and I'll look up to see what that person's about or whatever. Then
sure.
That's how I find out about people now. But certainly the days of reading about something is less likely to happen. I mean, the only magazine I still subscribe to is The Wire. And, you know, even that, eventually you reach the point where you think, oh, even they're being slightly kind of dismissive of some piece of work and they're not letting certain people through the door. I think it's frustrating. At the same time, as we've got this explosion of music, that there should be something to delight everybody, it's even harder to find because there's so much.
I know, it's pretty intense, actually.
Yeah.
That part about you, you know, discovering people through friends and whatnot, that, you know, that's a beautiful thing in itself. I mean, I'm exactly with you right there. Like, you know, my friends turn me on to things. They turn me on to their music and their friends' music. And that's, you know, I really do think that is a wonderful thing. And, I guess that's kind of how you have to go about it. You know, just, it's like you're stumbling upon things.
And it does have an added plus of, you could have a personal relationship with the musicians you're buying music from. You know, it becomes people you actually know. I mean, excuse me. That's something that I found since the kind of the internet became far more social, that people who I wouldn't have dreamed of ever being able to speak to, through things like Facebook and Twitter, are now reachable, and you know, it's been a real bonus for just doing this podcast.
That
you know, people that I've really wanted to, you know, people like I mentioned the Muses before, people like that I've admired since I was a teenager.
That's amazing.
You know, always
thought.
Yeah, always so far away, are suddenly able to speak to you. Mm-hmm. And you know, people who you've only previously seen on television or heard on the radio are suddenly you know, speaking to you face to face on a video feed. And it's and I think it's what happens. I think that's the really good side about it. I think the plus side is that everybody feels like more in touch with everybody else, but maybe there's a certain lack of realism in that, because that maybe gives the impression that we're all at the same level, whereas some of the kind of, you know, musicians from the generation before ours, because, you know, I'm of a similar age to you, Jared, those guys, you know, who were coming up through the 80s and doing stuff, have had opportunities with record labels that had stopped existing when we came up to do stuff.
Right.
And then opportunities that we had will no longer exist for the next lot. But maybe it's just a natural shift. I don't know.
It's hard to predict what's going to happen, you know. I mean, I think one of the bummerest things about it to me is, you know, I think a lot of labels are really scared to take risks that they used to take. And, you know, put out things that might not necessarily be guaranteed to sell or reach the, you know, critical audience. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So everything, it seems like, just sort of becomes like, you know, it's like they're putting their bets on something that's has to win, you know, versus like being able to put out more experimental or something that's weird or something that's not following, you know, the trends that are happening these days. And that's kind of a bummer, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, it's been said before that, you know, in this kind of American Idol sort of pop idol thing that we have going on, X Factor and all this kind of stuff, that kind of world, that the interesting voices of the 80s and 90s wouldn't have got anywhere in that period, you know, in what's going on now, you know, because the way that things are seen is how you're supposed to make it nowadays. Right. Those, you know, it's you're supposed to go on a talent show and you're supposed to do this, or you're supposed to be a teen idol. And you look at the bands that are colossally huge now, who have been going for a very long time. So you look at people like, you know, U2, and you look at REM, and you look at people who are still going, like the Rolling Stones. And, you know, all of those bands, even people like Radiohead, all of those bands, if they came along now, probably wouldn't survive beyond their first album. U2 would have been dropped after their first album. REM would have been dropped after their first album. The labels having that ongoing development with bands seems to have just gone. You're expected to make it with your first record, and if you don't, off you go.
You know. Yeah, but that's what I'm like. Even that mentality, unfortunately, I think kind of trickles down to the more indie labels too.
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of put out like some pretty, you know, sort of boring stuff, or stuff that's like guaranteed to, you know, sell 10,000 or whatever. It's just kind of it's kind of a drag, you know.
And I think it's something that I think you're absolutely right. I think it's something that filters through down to almost any label now that's still doing physical formats.
You know, sure.
Even somebody, and you know, I may lose some friends saying this, but even a label like K Records has played it very safe with what it's released over the years.
I agree with you.
They know what they like. Yeah. And they know what will sell to their audience. And you can't fault the business model, but you know, there's a lack of adventure there. But it's, again, there's not very much you can do to fix it. I mean, I suppose on the other side is you can just use Bandcamp and go screw it to the labels.
And
do it yourself, you know. So, but I mean, the other thing you do, of course, is you DJ on the radio.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about that.
So here in Port Townsend, we started a community radio station, nonprofit, about 2 years ago. So I kind of got in on that sort of on the ground floor, and I started DJing on a weekly basis for the last couple of years. I've been doing that, and it's pretty fun. Yeah.
So with the radio station, so what's the kind of reach of the station?
It's hard to say. I mean, a lot of people stream it. You know, it's a real like radio station with a tower, and you can tune it in on your tuner and whatnot. So that's cool, which I think kind of goes, there's an island across the sound from here called Whidbey. I know it reaches over there, which is a good, you know, half hour ferry ride. I forget the wattage amount, but, we have a pretty good reach, and, you know, of course with Facebook and stuff, it's like, it's easy for me to promote my show and get, you know, people from all over the place streaming, which is great, you know. So I'm not exactly sure how many, but it totally depends.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing, though. I mean, and the fact that it's going to sound really weird, and I think you'll probably understand what I mean, though. The fact that it has an actual broadcast that people who are in the area can tune in on their radios kind of legitimizes it more as a radio station, I guess, in people's heads, because you know, anybody can stream stuff over the internet, you know, as this show demonstrates, but it's something else to have somebody who've actually kind of had the confidence to make a transmitter available to you and all this kind of stuff, and to have gone to the extra trouble. I wonder, I mean, where does radio fit? Okay, that's a good question, because you do radio. Where do you think the radio fits in the current sort of music industry situation?
You know, I mean, call me naive, but I still believe in the power of radio. For example, I mean, with Solvents, you know, we've actually gotten quite a bit of support from Seattle station. Oh my gosh, why am I drawing a blank on this one? Give me a second. KEXP, I'm sorry. They've supported us a lot, and you know, the plays that they've given us like have definitely led to us being able to, you know, book better shows, and you know, it's a lot of people have heard us through their station. So yeah, I do believe that it is helpful, definitely, to get your music played on the radio. I think people are still listening.
Absolutely, and I think the other thing about the radio is that, you know, to listen to something streaming, you have to have some kind of digital device connected to the internet. To listen to the radio, you only have to have a $5 radio.
Yeah.
Almost anyone can get one. I mean, I was today, my wife and I were in our local kind of downtown area, the local city centre in Wolverhampton where we live. And mm-hmm. we were going into these kind of, I guess, it's kind of the equivalent of dollar stores in the States. And you know, you can buy little FM radios there. You can buy little radios that will listen, you know, that you can just tune into any of the local stations for free. It costs uh-huh. nothing to do it. You just chuck a battery in it. And I think there's an accessibility to radio that maybe doesn't exist so much for any other format, which I guess maybe explains why it's still going and seems to be.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe from the outside, it looks like it's not quite so affected by the rise of digital stuff. I mean, from the inside, is it being affected by, you know, the current trends in music downloading and stuff?
I don't really think it is. I mean, from my perspective, again, I'm working at a very small radio station in a small town, so I'm not really sure. You know, I play a lot of I bring my own vinyl, you know, like that's the majority of my show is that, although I will stream stuff from Spotify as well, you know, and that's a great, great tool for mm-hmm. people doing radio. It's, you know, pretty much anything instantly accessed. So, I mean, I think people are still pretty excited about radio. It seems like it, you know, they're like you're saying, I mean, there's a certain freedom to it that's, you know, and maybe it's nostalgia for some people, or maybe it's just they want to hear, you know, real people talking and introducing songs, DJing, you know, I mean, that's a big deal to people.
Yeah, I mean, and it survived television, hasn't it? It survived all the things that have come along that people said, oh, this is going to be the death of radio.
Sure.
Haven't they?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
maybe that's to do with the fact that it doesn't really, it's not, how can I word this? It's not dependent on how much money you've got, the ability exactly. to listen to it. So
yeah.
the person who's got virtually nothing, I mean, often, you know, if you see some homeless guy in the street and they've got like a cart and stuff, they'll often have a radio at least.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you can go right from people who are right at the bottom of the pile and, you know, really at the down on their luck, right up to the wealthiest. The access is exactly the same. It's so I think, yeah. I think there's a lot of power to it. I think that's why it makes sense. Also, it helps that it's pretty much the only thing you can have on in your car that
sure.
won't distract you. You can't watch things in your car. And,
yeah.
You know, you could put your iPod on, I suppose, and, you know, but if you want to...
Yeah, but then you're sitting there fiddling with your iPod while you're driving, you know, I mean, it's bad news. And the radio, it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. You stick the radio on and you just learn things in the background while you're driving around. So
yeah. Well, a big deal here, too, with our station is that, you know, Port Townsend, kind of, we're out on this peninsula that's very close to a pretty major fault line. And, you know, just our radio station, a lot of it is about being prepared for emergencies. And it's a great thing. I think it actually somehow, you know, makes people feel a bit safer, I guess, to know that that someone's there. And we're connected with the emergency broadcast system. So we're kind of ready, you know, to be... you know, letting people know what's going on in the event of an emergency. And I think that's an important thing too.
So do you think, I mean, it's, it does lead me into the next question I wanted to ask you is that Port Townsend, what kind of population has it got?
We're about 10,000.
And do you find being in a place that's fairly small, what's the kind of music community like, and what's the general kind of creative community like there?
Well, Port Townsend is kind of renowned as being sort of an artist community. There's a lot of different people here who create, whether it's poetry or painting or photography or music or sculpture. There's a great group of people who create, and there's a lot of really fantastic, very original musicians who live here and create here. So it's pretty cool. A lot of my friends are mind blowing, and every time I see them play, I'm just like, my gosh, you know, like this isn't run of the mill stuff. It's just, it's different. It's, you know, backwoodsy, and, you know, 'cause we're out there, we're kind of away from Seattle, and we're kind of in the woods, so there's definitely like a, you know, there's a kind of a hick culture here that kind of can clash with the hippiness of Port Townsend. So it's kind of a trip for sure. Yeah, I think there's some fantastic artists here on many different genres and medias.
And do you find that there's an audience for it there?
There is, yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes it's kind of, you know, it can be embarrassing. I mean, you know, there's people who have, you know, who still come and see us, who have, you know, they've fucking probably seen us play, you know, between 50 and 100 times over the years, you know, because we play, you know, we play here pretty consistently, honestly, you know, when we can, you know, we do sometimes twice a month, maybe even more in the summer, you know? And so like, you know, people keep coming and it's really kind of amazing. And sometimes I'm just like, you know, I'll see certain people and I'm just like, oh my God, you actually came out tonight. That's really sweet. I really appreciate it. But it, you know, it usually goes really well. We have really fun shows here and that's great.
See, I have a theory that there's a certain amount of positive influence from, for want of a better way of putting it, a kind of cultural isolation. So if you're away from the big city and you're not being looked at by the press or the media,
sure.
I think music scenes and art scenes that grow up in places like that are far more interesting than things that kind of spring up in the really big cities like, you know, London or Seattle or New York or whatever.
Sure.
I think there's this sense that because you're not being watched and there's no expectation, you can right. do what you want.
Yeah. There's no pressure. You know, you can be whatever you want to be, you know, and I've said this before, but I'm very thankful to my friends and fans here in Port Townsend who've kind of let us sort of, you know, accept whatever we've done really, you know, and that's been a real, real blessing, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, being able to continue to do what you're doing and have people interested, mm-hmm. you know, in a small place, I think it's,
yeah,
you know, I think again, it's almost as if you can't have the kind of global superstardom that seems to be impossible to achieve now, uh-huh. to my mind, it would be almost better to be able to be comfortable within your immediate surroundings.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a regional thing, and it's cool, and it. You know, whether or not you think so, it's actually an important role for people, you know, to know that you're going to be there and writing about your surroundings, which they can, you know, fully relate to, you know.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that bands coming from out of town, if any of them do, is the same support there with the audiences?
Yeah, it does. It's you know, obviously it's helpful to have a local on the bill. And but there's definitely been bands from out of town who've come here and really struck a chord with people and have been able to, you know, kind of keep coming back and have good shows and you know, make money and have a good time. So yeah, that's definitely people out here. You know, when a band's good who comes, mm-hmm. people love it. You know, they'll support it and the shows will be great. And that's definitely for sure happened.
And do you have a lot of venues, or is it limited to a handful?
It's a handful. We have, I'd say right now, there's about, in Port Townsend, I want to say between, at the most right now, there's eight.
Okay. That seems a healthy amount for the the size of the town. I think.
Yeah.
I think anything more and you start to get into competition that's going to cause problems for others.
Sure.
And anything less and it becomes a little bit, you know, maybe it reaches a point where certain bands can't get gigs at all or
right.
you know, so I'm assuming that it's the kind of place where pretty much anybody who's starting out are they able to find somewhere to play.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's a great thing.
And are the venues supportive of that? So they'll be, you know, you ring them up and say, I want to play a show. They'll be like, yeah, whenever.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah. That, I mean, that can happen. And if you're even, you know, if you're decent, you'll get to play again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, see, that's good. See, again, that's something you don't get in bigger cities.
No, it's very hard. Very hard. We were doing the Seattle thing a couple of years ago, we were, you know, we were getting booked a lot and sort of really focusing on, okay, let's like go to the city a bunch and play. And it was really weird. It was really not what I was used to. And, you know, some of the bands that we played with were really bad. And it was definitely this weird competitive thing. And a lot of just weird fashion-y kind of thing happening. And, you know, it was really a trip. I was really like, oh, I don't really think I'm, you know, I don't really think I'm up for this. You know what I mean?
But it's the kind of thing, isn't it, that you it's the expected route to take, and then
yeah.
you go and do it. And then, I mean, my experience of it is that, you know, what you're supposed to do in the UK is eventually start playing shows in London. That's
right.
the goal, is to be able to play shows
yeah.
in London. And I've reached a point, I hate playing shows in London. It takes forever to get there. It's expensive
yeah.
to get there. You get there and nobody's interested. And then you don't get home until 2 a.m. And,
yeah.
you know, I'd much rather, if I'm going to play a show, play 5 minutes down the road,
yeah.
be home before midnight,
yeah.
still have my hearing intact and my pockets still have some money in, and
right.
still be able to get up for work the next morning without feeling completely fucked.
There you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think usually those shows are always going to be better, you know?
Yeah.
It's... You know, like the stuff that, you know, it's weird. I mean, we still play in Seattle and stuff. It's just not as frequent. We kind of have backed off of trying to get over there and book a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm. How far is Seattle to get? How long does it take to get there?
So Seattle, it's about a 45-minute drive south. East, and then a half-hour ferry ride.
Right. So it's not a huge amount of time to get there, but there's quite a lot of things to take into account.
Downtown.
Yeah. So that can...
You're still there? That
turns into a bit of a trek.
What's that?
I was saying, I can imagine that turns into a bit of a trek after a while.
Yeah, well, definitely. You know, when you play and then, you know, you're drinking and stuff and suddenly it's 2 o'clock and you have to catch the last ferry, you know, you don't get home till 4 a.m. I was kind of, you know, crushing us, honestly. It sort of broke our band up for a little while.
So now you find that just being able to literally drive down the road.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, again, like when we can get, you know, on a decent bill in Seattle, it's always really fun to do, you know. Every couple months, but we were really trying to do it like 2 and 3 times a month, mm-hmm. and it was punishing, man, I have to tell you.
And there's also the other side of it is that, you know, if you go a long way to play a show and you get there and you realize you've forgotten something.
Yeah.
You get there and you go, you're packing, going through your bag for your stuff, you go, shit.
Yeah.
I've forgotten that important thing.
Totally.
You can't just go, I'll just nip home and get it. You're just like, you know.
You're doomed.
So I used to love the thing that if you had a problem and some equipment didn't work, you could just mm-hmm. drive for 5 minutes, go and get it, and then come back.
Right.
Or you could sound check and go home and then come
sure.
back. Things like
sure.
that. So, I think the message here is local music scenes in small places can be fantastic. And I did like the fact that you said that a band coming through from elsewhere, it helps if they've got a local act on the bill.
Yeah.
I like because that's almost an exact reversal of bigger places.
Right.
The local acts were clamoring to get on the bill for the big bands.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe the bands from out of town coming through to Port Townsend, they could have gone, oh, we really needed a local act to help us actually pull anybody.
And exactly.
I like that.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. That's how it needs to be. Well, some of the venues here too, it's like they, you know, I actually do a lot of booking in town as much as I can. You know, I know all the people and I can be like, well, this band's coming and do you guys want to blah, blah, blah or whatever. And so that's always really fun too, you know?
That's good. Yeah. So what's next for the Solvents then?
So right now we just finished up a song for, we're going to be on this compilation on American Laundromat Records. It's a Wes Anderson soundtrack tribute. Wes Anderson, you know, was a film director. He did the movie Rushmore and
Royal Tenenbaums.
Royal Tenenbaums,
Life Aquatic, and
Life Aquatic,
Bottle Rocket, and a huge number of really good movies, basically.
Great movies. And his soundtracks are always so fantastic. So the guy at American Laundromat came up with I think pretty brilliant idea to do a compilation of, you know, his stuff. And so we ended up getting Nothing in This World Can Stop Me Worrying About That Girl, a Kinks song that's on the Rushmore soundtrack. So we just finished recording that, and that's going to be coming out in April. I'm very excited.
Excellent. And you dropped a hint in our kind of little back and forth messages on Facebook that there's a new project.
Yeah. Have you heard of Patreon?
Patreon. I haven't. Tell me about Patreon.
Patreon is like it's kind of a funding website that's sort of like Kickstarter, except you aren't funding one big project. You're kind of funding monthly with small increments, I guess. So what we're kind of planning on doing is we set up a Patreon webpage, and it kind of seems to work best for people who do videos. I mean, you can do it with songs too. You can do it with whatever you want. But what we're kind of trying is just sort of an experiment. Is we want to do, you know, make a video every month, whether it's a music video or I'd like to break into some comedy, honestly, but we'll see about that. So we're going to be producing a video every month, and the idea is that you get people, your supporters, to, you know, pitch in a dollar a month or five. It's kind of, I guess, like it's sort of like online busking.
Nice.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's going to work or not, but we just kind of thought, well, why don't we give it a try? You know, I'm always interested in, you know, how are artists pulling in money these days? You know, how do they do it? And when I see new things popping up, I'm kind of like, oh, that seems kind of cool. Well, maybe we'll try that, you know, and see if it works. I don't know. We'll see.
Sounds like a good thing to me. I mean, when you were saying how are artists pulling in money, it immediately made me think of Amanda Palmer. Now, Amanda Palmer, I can't stand her. But,
no, she's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, she's kind of doing all the things that the DIY people are having to do. Mm-hmm. She's doing it just as some kind of facile art statement.
Right.
Married to a millionaire writer. you know, she's the fact that she was even asking for money on Kickstarter when she didn't really need it.
Yeah.
And then she wasn't going to pay the art. Yeah, I can't stand her. I just find everything she does immensely offensive.
Yeah.
And she taints all these things that are really good.
I know, yeah. I know. It sucks. She's like, bad. And you know, her music sucks too,
yes,
by the way.
Yeah. I mean, she was on a She was on something talking about the arts in the UK, and she was asked in part of this show, I think it was on the radio, they were saying, what would you donate to this museum if you could? And everybody else was saying, well, I'd donate this sculpture, or I'd donate this painting, or I'd donate this book. She said, I would donate myself as a living work of art. It's like, oh god, it's like full face palm, the most self-obsessed woman alive. And like I say, she taints everything. So you come up with an idea and you're gonna go, oh, I'm gonna do the online busking, we'll see if it can make some money. Somebody's gonna say, oh, like Amanda Palmer,
right? And you're like, never mind.
Yeah, you're like, no, forget that idea. It's almost like that episode of South Park where everything that Butters came up with, the Simpsons had done. Uh-huh. Everything you want to do, Amanda Palmer's done it.
Yeah,
I know. Oh, let's crowdfund an album. Amanda Palmer did that. No, yeah. let's ask horn sections to help us out for free in each town. Amanda Palmer's done that. Damn it! she's not good. I don't know why I mentioned her, but she just annoys me. So it's quite nice to hear somebody else agree that Amanda Palmer's annoying.
I remember.
No, so go on.
Oh, I don't know if you saw, since we're on Amanda Palmer thing, did you see that poem she wrote for the Boston?
Oh my Bombers? God.
I was just like, are you kidding me? This is horrible. I mean, it's just not even good for one thing. And it's
her defense was even better.
I know.
When people said that shit, instead of her going, yeah, you know what it is, but I just wanted to write it. She went down the route of, now, and you know this, some listeners won't. She went down the route, listeners, of saying, yeah, you're just too stupid to understand it. It's like, that's not what you say. If people turn around and criticize your work, the last thing you do is say, oh, well, I'm operating on a higher plane than you. And obviously, it was terrible. In fact, you know what? I'm going to find it and I'm going to read a bit right now. Okay, Amanda Palmer. Boston poem. Okay, Boston bombing poem. Here we go. It is truly awful. The second article on a Google hit is Amanda Palmer stoops to a new low. Is the second hit on Google with that. Okay, here we go. I go to her blog. Here it is. The worst poem ever written. Oh, my God. You don't know how it felt to be in the womb, but it must have been a little weird.
If you love people enough, they'll give you everything.
I don't know what happened there.
I don't know either.
Did we get cut off just as I was about to start reading Amanda Palmer's poem?
Yeah, maybe she heard you and cut you off or something.
You know what? That's what I'm starting to think maybe happened there. You know, I'm not going to risk that again because she's clearly got powers beyond our reckoning.
She is kind of witchy, isn't she?
She is a little bit, yeah. I think, you know, her reach has become long if she can kill a Skype conversation with just her spider sense tingled and she went, someone somewhere is dissing my work. Neil! To the Bat Cave, to the Amanda Cave, and she went down, and her and Neil Gaiman sat, and they singled in on the connection, and they sent a robot to cut a cable under the sea somewhere. Which I can imagine her doing that. The poem's shit. Let's just say that. So, well, I'm glad I got you back. It does seem like probably a safe place that we should draw this to a close to avoid any further problems with Amanda Palmer. Is there anything you'd like to say before we finish, Jared?
Let's see. Well, thank you very much for having me, by the way. That was really fun. That was actually my first successful Skype call.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I've been behind the times a bit and finally got a decent computer, and yeah, it's pretty cool.
Very good. I do like Skype. Google Hangouts are good, but Skype's good for kind of the audio quality. That's good. So, yeah, I mean, when you say successful, I mean, Amanda Palmer obviously got in there and hijacked it.
Sabotage.
She did. She got in there and caused a problem. So, yeah. Is there anything coming up with any of your projects that we need to know about that we haven't covered?
Okay, so yeah, we've got the Patreon. If anybody listening wants to check that out, you just go to Patreon, type in Solvents. We have a page there. We have a pitch video up. It's kind of neat. You should check it out. It's an interesting project, and we're kind of excited to be involved in that. Once again, we've got the Wes Anderson tribute. We've got a song on there coming out. In I think April or May that'll be done, and we're also working on a new album, and I'm hoping that'll be finished and available by the summer.
Fantastic. Also, you're on Facebook, very close to 1,000 likes. Come on,
so close.
if it's not at that by the time the podcast comes out, listeners, go and look up Solvents on Facebook and like Solvents, because then we could push you over.
I know. I'm like, I hate asking people for that, you know, but I'm kind of like, I'm almost at a point where I might start fishing around. We'll see. It's always one of those things where it's like, you know, it's like you kind of want to ask, but you kind of feel like a douche for asking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I might invite a few people on your behalf right now. Let's see. I've invited Adam Smith from the Hector Collectors. I'm sure Luke Fishbeck from Lucky Dragons would be into that. Yeah, we'll put him in. Cool. So we'll invite a few people. Billy Sampson from Glasgow, he'll love it. Hopefully, come on, if you go to that website when the podcast comes out and it's not at 1,000, hit like and see if we can have any impact and get that to 1,000. The website itself, the solventsmusic.com or whatever it was, is don't bother looking at that. Bandcamp is solvents.bandcamp.com.
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure solvent stuff. Yeah, totally.
I will put links to these things in the description that comes with the podcast, so anybody who wants to find those things. Jared, thank you ever so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
The show is nothing without the guests, so I appreciate you appearing.
Sure.
So, and all that's left to say then is a Future Library goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Future Library. Future Library is brought to you by PetPiranha.com and is hosted by myself, Alex Botton. The podcast is free, but if you do want to show your appreciation, feel free to go along to alexbotton.co.uk and click through to music, where you'll be able to find things that you can buy, or go to asmallglassghost.co.uk, where you can buy my latest music. Episodes come out when I feel like it, mostly weekly. But that's it, so thank you for listening.